how important do you think it is for especially us as NSA students to be involved in all areas of civics and keep up to date with everything instead of, you know, just being aware of what we're told to be aware of, like the hot button issues potentially?
Mm-hmm. Right. So at NSA Civics Club, we focus on the structure of government, not issues. Mm-hmm. We purposely do that. We're an educational institution. And if we understand the structure of government, then we're less likely to get wound up about issues, and issues make more sense to us. So when I say the structure of government, what model of, for example, in Moscow, what model of city government do we use? What model of county government do we use? How are we represented at the State House? And then how are we represented in Washington, D.C.? Those things are structure. And that's where we focus. And then, of course, issues come out of that. Mm-hmm. But I've spent the last several years, close to 8 years, piecing this structure together. And mm-hmm. issues are actually a distraction from that initially. And later, the structure empowers your understanding of the issues.
And so on the civics club point, you said it started during COVID. Was it kind of the COVID thing specifically that gave birth to that? Or is that something you were kind of working on and thinking about before? Or
working on and thinking mm-hmm. about before, because I had this sense that, oh my goodness, I see this and I've wanted to understand it for a long time. And I started to talk to people wondering why I was the one who didn't understand it mm-hmm. and how they understood it. And I realized this is a generality and this is a stereotype, but I'm going to say it anyway. Typically, it's the lawyers, the attorneys who understand our American system. Mm-hmm. Typically, though, they're not teachers. They're professionals defending whatever their area of expertise mm-hmm. is. But I think the average educated American citizen needs to understand our system almost as well as an attorney does.
And do you think it comes out of Christian duty or American, like our duty as Americans?
Mm-hmm. Great
to
question.
Be involved in this.
It's both. Mm-hmm. It's a dual inheritance. We've inherited all things in Christ. He's the nexus of all things. In mm-hmm. him, we live and move and have our being. In him, all things consist. That's primary. Mm-hmm. But secondarily, we are inheritors of the supreme law of the land, which is the U.S. Constitution. All government in America flows out of the U.S. Constitution, and it goes down and it's reflected at every level. And even more beautiful than that, the 13 colonies before we were formed were actually the prototypes for the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. And so it's both. We have a grand inheritance, a dual inheritance.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I really appreciated about the Civics Club last year was there were the ongoing county elections. We invited all of the candidates for different offices. Mm-hmm. We just had coffee and donuts with them and we mm-hmm. got to know them. And that was really great. Knowing them a little more personally. I mean, I'm sure you know them better than we do, but I guess my question is networking. How important is that, getting to know your local politicians? Mm-hmm. And then as a follow-up to that, what is your, how well do you know certain people? Mm-hmm. Where does your network look like?
Well, I would agree with you. That county meet and greet breakfast was incredible. And I want to do that again. The sword and shovel was new. And, you know, NSA can seem intimidating to people who think they know what we're about and they really don't. Mm. And so that was just a wonderful opportunity to spend time one-on-one with people. Mm-hmm. And they stayed a long time and it was a great experience. Mm. What was the second part of the question?
Your interactions personally.
Yeah, so one of the things that frustrates me is that I'm finite. And so I can't read all the books I have on my desk. I can't write all the things I want to write. And I can't go spend time with all the people I want to spend time with. I have a dear friend who I sit with or sit near or spend time with after city council. And she'll text me during the week, and I think, oh, I wish I had more time to spend with her. So ditto for other people on city council. I've had coffee with one of them, and we have plans to do it again. And then I've had coffee with a former city councilor when she was in elected office, and we had a fine time together. I really like her, and I often think I should stop in and see Brandy, and I don't, and I should thank her for her One World providing hot chocolate during It's a Wonderful Life in over in the Kenworthy. So I think being limited and trying to work on the things I'm working on takes time.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I think, too, right, one thing, you know, we say around here a lot in Moscow is all of Christ for all of life, right? And, you know, I think that kind of principle of stewardship is applied to the civil realm is kind of what, you know, what we're talking about here. And I think, so getting practical, maybe, what, you know, I think maybe in a lot of people's minds, certainly, at least in my mind, until kind of you know, learning about these things for the first time, it seems really kind of, at least maybe not foreign, but kind of out of reach to get involved in these sorts of things. So what would your kind of exhortation be to somebody who doesn't know much? How should they get involved? How could, what are some easy kind of inroads to this sort of thing?
So I read the Harry Potter series with our youngest. With our oldest, we were, we wouldn't let them read about Harry Potter. We that seemed kind of sketch, and we weren't going there. And so as you get older, and our kids, we found our kids, some of them read it in Latin after they'd had Mr. Griffith here. And then my husband listened to it. He has a 45-minute commute, and he listened to all the books on recorded version. And then I thought, well, I'm going to read it to my son. Well, there's a quote in one of them that I really like. It's a Dumbledore quote, and of course there are lots of good Dumbledore quotes, but he said, I read the Muggle newspapers unlike most of my ministry friends. And so I would say the easiest way to figure out what's going on around you and what the tenor is and to kind of put your finger up in the air and see where the wind's blowing is to subscribe to your local newspaper. I've heard the local newspaper be called a dinosaur. It's a thing of the past. But I wouldn't have known about that energy issue if it weren't for the local newspaper. And when we moved here, I didn't subscribe right away. And then I said, you know, Greg, I think we should have subscribed to the newspaper, but I know that once we do, our Moscow honeymoon will be over. And it's true. I get the newspaper and my blood pressure goes up. And that's how you find out, in my opinion. I stay off of social media for the most part because I don't like that people act differently on social media than they do in person. And I'd rather deal with a person up front than something that they're afraid to say to my face. And I don't want to smear people on social media, and I'll probably be smeared. You can't please all the people all the time. But I don't have a lot of use for that in the civil realm, and I think it needs to be really toned down. And then the other thing is just go observe. Go to every level of government that we have elected representatives of the people. We're a constitutional republic. We operate by electing people. A lot of people, in my opinion, concentrate too much on voting and on getting people into office. I say go and watch what's already going on because it's hard to know how you might want to change something until you understand how it works. And the interesting thing about all of that is if you go frequently enough, even if you have different principles, you still become fond of the people that you spend a lot of hours with in a room regularly.
I was talking to actually another member of the Civics Club, saying, he was saying consistency, going to these, you know, town meetings is actually really important because then not only do you build a relationship with, you know, your city council or something like that, but you know, there's a certain credence, like a certain credence given to you now, like if there's a more important issue that a lot of people are hearing about, and a bunch of angry people start flooding into the city council.
You
they're
have
not going to be
credit built up.
Right. Yeah. They're not going to listen to them as much as the person who's there every single week. Mm-hmm. And then it is maybe the same important issue, but they're going to listen mm-hmm. to this person. So is that probably important?
The classic one in my experience was we were going to have the budget. It was the public hearing night for the annual budget for the city of Moscow. Mm-hmm. That year it was a $95 million budget. And I'm not really a spreadsheet and numbers person. And I had spent a Saturday, I think 3 or 4 hours evaporated in front of my computer screen trying to understand this several hundred page document. And so I was at city council and I was thinking, you know, I hope somebody comes and addresses this mm-hmm. and maybe has combed over it more than I have. Well, that was the night that there was also public testimony for the masking ordinance. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the rare times that I actually knew a lot of people at city council, but they came and they testified that they were against masking, and then they left, and then we had the $95 million budget hearing. Mm.
Okay.
So issues or structure. Mm-hmm. In my mind, the budget is structure.
Yeah.
The masking was an issue, and this too shall pass, usually with issues. Mm.
So you mentioned going over a several hundred page mm-hmm. document. What would you recommend for people who may not
have the gumption?
Yeah, exactly. It's like us NSA students, you know.
Don't start with budgets.
Okay.
Start by reading the mission statement, the comprehensive plan. Most cities have a mission statement, a vision statement, and a comprehensive plan. Start going to meetings. Learn how a meeting's structured. Mm-hmm. Learn that you can't raise your hand and say point of information. I know, thankfully enough, not to do that here. And know that if you are going to speak, have something worth listening to and stay within your time frame. The first time I addressed city council, it was, I think it's a 3-minute time allowance, and I went 7. And I didn't get off on the right foot with Mayor Lambert on that one.
Okay. Well, kind of a 2-part question.
Mm-hmm.
In the landscape of Christian involvement in politics, from what you've seen,
mm-hmm.
what do you think is the biggest pitfall that you're seeing? And then on the converse side of that, what do you have the most hope for?
Mm-hmm.
And what can you see is being worked on, a good benefit of this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I realized I'm not the only person who doesn't understand the American system. Mm. And at this point now, after I talk to somebody for a couple of minutes, I can usually tell from what they tell me if they've ever done anything within the system, not run for office, but done mm-hmm. anything mm-hmm. and accomplished anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the drawback is this, it's an extremism and an inflexibility. So I'm reading a book right now that was recommended to me actually by a new St. Andrews student who I think very highly of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Politics for the Greatest Good. And the author makes a distinction between your principles, and which you never compromise on,
mm-hmm.
and then your policies, which you can compromise on and you can be incremental about. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go for the purest form. We'll use an easy one, abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Christians want the all or nothing version, you know, mm-hmm. give me absolutely no abortion at any time in our laws, or I won't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this book calls for an all or something approach, which I love that, an all or something. Let's start moving incrementally towards what we believe is right.
Mm-hmm.
And let's actually start doing something in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could call me I'm an idealist, but I'm also a pragmatist, but I'm an incrementalist. but I'm a post-millennialist, which gives me great hope because God is sovereign over all things, even in the civil realm, even when we don't like the outcome of an election. And so I think there's great hope for our nation. I know many of us feel like we are on the brink of things breaking down and we're nervous, but I know that, you know, God raises up kings. He removes kings. He gives wisdom to the wise. And I also know that he's given us a lot of proverbs. By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle word breaks a bone.
Well, that's wonderful.
Oh. Okay.
Nice.
Well, let's...
that's a great note, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Let's actually move to your Christian testimony. How did you kind of mature in the faith?
Yeah. What's your Christian story here?
Okay. Yeah. As you get older, the story gets longer. So I'll try to condense this down. You know, like maybe many of your listeners, I heard the gospel. I heard it on the radio once when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I think I prayed and accepted Christ, but it was just one of those kind of once and done and move on things. Mm. And then my next door neighbors invited me to Vacation Bible School. I heard the gospel there. It was at a Baptist church, but I was from a high church liberal background, and I had trouble understanding the difference in just maybe the mode of what I was seeing. So I thought, well, they have the truth, but they don't have the beauty in their building. And I, as a child, even a child's known by his deeds, whether they're good or evil. I knew my deeds were evil. I knew I needed a redeemer. And I heard about it at the Baptist church, but it just didn't fit what I thought church was. So I prayed and accepted Christ there, I think. But my neighbors who took me, the lady I prayed with probably didn't tell them because there was, you know, nothing happened and I didn't know what happened. So then in high school, I was a senior and I went to visit church with a girl I knew who I thought seemed like she was a Christian. Yeah. We went to United Methodist Church. And there happened to be a graduate student home for the weekend visiting, and my friend wanted me to meet all sorts of young men that day, and I wasn't there to meet young men. I was there to find God until it was time to leave, and I said, Brenda, I want to meet that one. And it was almost like the angels were singing, and that was Greg Landis, who's my husband. And I've never been the same since that day I saw him and met him. He, as I said, is the best person I know. He actually lived out the gospel before me. But one time we were on a date, and I said, where do you go to church when you're back at college? And he said, well, you know, I go to a Bible-believing Baptist church. And I thought, it's over. We're done. Yeah. But I kept asking him questions, and he was so winsome. And that's where I saw the power of kindness in the fragrance of Christ with the gospel. And so I eventually went down to Indiana University and went to that school and was part of a local church outreach. And it's very much like our CRF here, you know, local church based. And that night, I think it was the first week I went, the pastor was teaching on Hebrews, seven steps of falling away from God. And I looked at the seven steps and I thought, oh, I've got a mess in my life and I don't fit any of those steps. So I talked to the campus pastor afterwards and he said, well, you know, have you ever accepted Jesus as your savior? And I said, well, yeah, maybe. So I prayed that night and accepted, you know, for sure. But then I had teaching afterwards. And it's that, it's that understanding God's word for the first time. So local church has always been the center of what Greg and I have done. We met at church and we served at church. And so that's what we do. But God has brought me along and it's a journey. But he did redeem me. He forgave me. And there aren't always the feelings involved in it, but there's the written word and there's that assurance.
Oh, that's wonderful. And so then how did you guys make it out here to Moscow?
Well, in 2001, we found New St. Andrews College. And we had two friends disciple us when we were in, in college, and Greg was in graduate school, and they had been to Bible college, and they talked about ideas. They batted around ideas that we didn't know you were allowed to bat around. And they would bat around how foreign missions should be done, how Christian college should be done. Mm-hmm. And we thought, wow, you mean you're allowed to think critically about these things? So then fast forward years later, I found in the dark ages of the internet, I found New St. Andrews College. I thought, wow, they don't take government money. They don't have dorms. And they don't all have terminal degrees. They've just started a college because they were intelligent. Mm-hmm. And we just followed that. Mm-hmm. And we somehow in the mail got a Canon Press book catalog. And I guess that's actually what we found first. And that rocked my world because we'd had some of the ideas. I saw that the centerfold in it was God gave wine. And I thought, oh, we don't drink wine. That's not right. What is this? And on the cover, there was Celtic art on the, and I love Celtic art. I thought, what? And so it was one of those times where I was trying to touch the mail once and not like have all the normal piles I have. Mm-hmm. So I threw it away, and then I got it back out and I thought, what was that thing? And I stood for about an hour over the trash and read this. And I called Greg at work. And I said, Greg, there are people who think things that we think. And they write books. Mm-hmm. And so we got we had the number two library in the nation at that time, Columbus Metropolitan Library System. And I was able to get, I think it was 9 books just within the system. Mm-hmm. And then that year, I think we did 50 some interlibrary loans. Because I mean, wow. Why buy a book if you can borrow it? I didn't even know which one to buy. I'll take all of them. Yeah. But no, we just read slowly, pieced it together. And so eventually we came out and visited, and I was really skeptical. Mm-hmm. Spent about 2 years looking under every corner, trying to see, is this a cult? Is this, what is this?
Totally.
And speaking of writing books.
Good segue. You're working on a book.
Yeah, you have, yeah.
Yes. it's what we do right now. Yeah. It's been going on for about 2 years, and the ideas have been percolating for a little over 5, and I'm ready to get it done.
Yeah.
It's supposed to come out in the spring, 2024. Mm. It's called The Forgotten Realm, and it's a Christian handbook for civic engagement.
Mm. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
I think that'll be a...
We look very importantly into the camera.
The book. There we go. Am I supposed to do that too?
Do it. No. Okay. Wow. Thank you very much. To close, just your 1-minute pitch for all the students to join the Civics Club.
Oh, we'd love to have you. I haven't done an elevator pitch on this. It's a hard sell. Let me try. We would love to have you come and join us at Civics Club. Mm-hmm. Our goal is, as I said earlier, to graduate leaders who shape culture, civic leaders who shape civic culture, living faithfully under the Lordship of Jesus Christ.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.